RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Dark to Light podcast with...
The Frank Wall, the Frank Tsunami, the Frank Hurricane, Hurricane Frank.
Hurricane Frank and Beans. We are back together again on this wonderful Friday of, the Friday before midterms. I'm glad to be back. I really love doing this show with you, Frank. I really do.
I look forward to it. And you know what? Great job. I know I filled in for the both of us last week. I did a little half hour, but it was for I'm happy I did it because I'm OCD and I don't like missing weeks for anything. So I'm happy I did it. But B, you did such a great job down in D.C. I am honored to lay down any kind of cover fire for you.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm blushing because it was really, really, thank you, first of all. Second of all, it was a fantastic weekend full of, the most amazing, love and camaraderie. And I will share one thing before, because we could talk about it the whole time. It was great seeing you. It was great seeing your little crew, even though Matt doesn't like to speak.
No, it doesn't. He's a little bit more to himself. He was way. I'm telling you, Matt was. He kept talking about. I have to keep alert for Antifa. So they're not going to come. Don't worry.
Well, they did make some sort of an appearance. Somebody did in the midst of my speech, which I thought was great. But yeah, he was just. I didn't even get to say hello to him. I didn't know if he was all right, let's just talk about this because I didn't even know if he was with you or you just met him there. Like, I had no idea who he was.
I pick up wherever I go, I pick up stragglers and they just stick with me.
I'm like, he looked very mean and I didn't know what to do with him. Oh, goodness. I really didn't. I was afraid to say hello. I was afraid of him.
Never be. I'll tell him that you were afraid. So next time he'll apologize.
Yeah, I don't want him to think that I was being rude, but I just didn't know if he even wanted to say anything or whatever. But I do love him. He's great. I love him on your show. So.
Well, it was a great time. We all had a good time. Rob loved it. It was all awesome.
The last person that spoke, we opened up the brunch on Sunday for people to say things. And the last person that spoke was a transgender female who said that they had never felt more loved and welcomed and accepted in their entire lives than they did that weekend with a bunch of conservatives.
You know, let me just say it's one of those things where I gained so much perspective from that march, only because it was very, very little reference to party. There was nothing. It wasn't a recruitment call for one party or the other. It was a string cutting call. It was almost like a string cutting ceremony where everybody was just like, hey, you know what? I am detaching myself from the track. I'm giving myself more than two options, and I'm not going to buy into I'm not going to be eating the pablum anymore.
Yeah.
And it really forced you to look around at all the people, and you talk about, I hate the, it's sad that that our society has made words like diversity so ugh. But you look at the diversity on the surface and how everybody's lifestyle, they live their lives and all that stuff. That right there was strung together so nicely by some principles that were, oh my God, it was so great to be able to dig beyond the external, because of course the external is what the mainstream in politics is all based on. And and it was a really great exercise in just really showing how, hey, your life is your life, and over here, no matter how you live it, nobody's going to be using your personal life as a political cudgel to beat everybody else into submission anymore. And yeah, you're never going to be around a group of people who are 100% comfortable with you, or you 100% comfortable with them. But it's all right, because that is part of the toughening process and the preparation for living in a free country. We always talk about it, and it was. It really was an amazing exercise, and I loved all the people I met, and it was awesome.
It was great. It was just beautiful. No identity politics. It was really just awesome. We have a packed show today. Packed. And before we go on, I just want to thank everybody because we're doing really well and the podcast is growing, and that's all because of you guys. So if you could keep sharing the hell out of this thing to your friends and your family, if you enjoy the dynamic between Frank and I and the news we cover and what we do here, please share it. Please, subscribe to the podcast, and thank you so much for making this an amazing experience for the two of us.
Absolutely.
News time, Frank.
News.
Okay. So we've got George Papadopoulos. Let's talk about him for a minute. Right now, as we speak, in about 20 minutes, actually, because we record in the morning, probably what is going to be like one of the most anticipated shows I've ever listened to ever will be coming online, which would be Dan Bongino's podcast with George Papadopoulos as a guest.
My gosh.
Now, I know there are some questions that Dan won't ask him, obviously. But I think overall, Dan has a very, very, very solid grasp on this entire story. So it's going to be questions that he wouldn't be asked on the mainstream media. And I know they've been, like, as per their Twitters, going back and forth with one another about what can be asked. Because like George said, we're almost there. And Dan said, we're still trying to finalize it. So there's going to be some like kind of box around the questions. But how excited are you to listen to that podcast?
I'm very excited because I tell you, anytime, like, so I'm not partial to any broadcast network out there. I watch Fox. I actually watch CNN and MSNBC content more than I watch Fox because I want to be able to see what the craziest of the crazy are doing. But, you know, I want putting George Papadopoulos on The View or putting George Papadopoulos even on Sean Hannity's show. Mm. It's like my skin crawls.
Yep.
I would much rather put him or anybody into the hands of the people of the real decentralized news networks and the independent investigators and those who know what questions to ask and those who know after you ask the question, shut up.
Yep.
And let them talk.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not up against any commercial breaks. They're not trying to hit any of their nightly mantra points. I just want to hear these people talk, and I want them to be in the hands of those who are not afraid to toe a little bit more of an edgy line.
I'm going to reach out to Mr. Papadopoulos and ask him for an interview personally. And I think that he's open to that. I might ask my little Twitter family to help me get that message out when I'm ready. But I have so many questions. If he could just answer them for me, then I could move on and figure this out. You know what I mean? There's some like, yeah. Like what is going on with the, okay. So yesterday he says, now this is just going to be stream of consciousness out of beans. Okay. Yesterday, he tells us basically that two major news organizations came to him in April of 2017 and told him that he had a FISA warrant out on him. Now, here's the thing. That means, if you think about it, the warrant on Page had apparently emailed Papadopoulos. So there's two hops between Page, Papadopoulos, and somebody else. There's two hops on the FISA. Mm-hmm. Who was two hops away from Papadopoulos that wasn't two hops away from Page that they needed to get information on if they had a FISA warrant on Papadopoulos?
I don't know. At that point, I don't know, because I mean, even from Page, you can two hop your way to the campaign director. It could be Lewandowski. It could, I mean, you're already very close to Trump himself. Was Papadopoulos closer to Trump than Carter Page?
No, he was so, no, he never. I don't even think he ever spoke to Trump.
See, so then that would be my question, because, you know, looking at Carter Page's influence, circle of influence, I guess if you land a FISA on anybody in that campaign, you're going to be at least two hops away from the campaign manager.
Listen, you know who he did talk to?
Who?
Or who was involved in emails? Sessions.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
We know that from the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence report.
That's, oh yeah. Okay, now I remember that hearing. I remember the hearing now. Yeah, and you know, not only that, so
that's
now
a senator.
I know, and then you have this idea of, oh my gosh, so another FISA?
Yeah. So, I yeah.
And not only that, but did you saw that the deleted tweet by Papadopoulos, right?
Which one?
On Halloween. On Halloween, I think it was later in the evening on Halloween, he tweeted something out and then deleted it. But somebody kept the screen grab around. He said this: the country that the Obama DOJ was spying on me for was not Russia. That country will be revealed in the FISA declassification. Stay yes. tuned. It's a shocker.
Yes, I did see that. Yep. Yeah, I mean, he's been dropping bombshells. So here's a couple of the problems. And it wouldn't be a friendly, like, kiss your butt interview with me, because here's some of the problems I have. You know, how did he just all of a sudden figure this out now? Like, yeah. I know maybe he's been figuring it out for a while, but he had to have had some idea in April of 2017 before the special counsel was appointed, right? That's before the special counsel was appointed. That's the Crossfire Hurricane operation. So before then, he had some idea that he was in some kind of trouble because they were looking into him. So then can you explain to me your beautiful wife's James Dean comments and her posture when she first started being interviewed by the media after George Papadopoulos was arrested? And then the sudden shift of her tone to asking for a pardon.
You know, the things around this right now are bringing me back to my first questions about the intention and the presence of George Papadopoulos in general, where where we go from, oh, this guy was a plant, to, oh, well, this guy, maybe he's a patsy, or maybe this guy is a plant whose plan A didn't work out and all of a sudden he was then flushed like a patsy. So maybe he was half and half. Either way, I always keep reminding people and myself, patsy or plant, he and Carter Page are the keys to unraveling all of this. Agreed. Because their presence and what happened to them ultimately proves this is all a farce. So, you know, I don't like to hook myself up in the semantics too much, whether or not he went in there with ill intent or maybe he was made, you know, he was an example was made of him, or he was used in a way that he did not want to be used at first. Who the hell knows? All we do know is that the way that he got into the Trump campaign was pretty interesting, because his time in politics, whether it be, you know, working in the Clinton State Department, or whether it be spending a little bit of time on the doomed Ben Carson campaign, all of that right there even corroborates what we know was to be the Pied Piper candidacy strategy for the Clinton campaign. They wanted to whittle away all of the competition around Donald Trump to expose him, because they believed he would be the most easily beatable. So for him to already have those State Department ties and then go into the first target of the media and the Clinton cabal being Ben Carson and then into Trump, I mean, that supports the whole plant idea. But, you know, other than that, he was flushed at one point.
You know what I don't like? You know, this is a little hard. Like, what I don't like is this. It's like, if you make a suggestion like you just made, people get angry. Like, I've noticed people are like, he was not a plant. Like, you don't know any better than I do, dude. You really don't, okay? And people, like, just stuck on one version of things without all the information. You know, I could be wrong about a lot of things, but I'm not closing the door to any other possibility. Just like you just said, whatever the case may be here, he's central to this entire story. Like it or not, like whatever he ended up being or is, or maybe he realized he was being used and being made for the fall guy. You know, he's literally going to be serving one day in jail. And he says one day is too much for what they did to me. I'm going to, you know, exculpatory evidence, blah, 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 blah. And this all led to basically the FBI coming out and saying, well, we don't have to show exculpatory evidence when getting a FISA warrant. Well, you don't have to show exculpatory evidence when the person's not even there to defend themselves. You can spy on anybody then. That's not even that's horrible. I can't.
And you see, at the crux of all of this is the deep state, the shadow government that we have going on over here. See, this is not, and that's why we always come back around to this point too. It's not a matter of throwing these crooks in jail and outing them and exposing them and really showing what the hell was going on and then putting in people we think are trustworthy. This is the kind of activity that is bred within this system. It's all the whole thing's got to go. I don't think there's any safe way to spy on citizens.
No,
we have a Fourth Amendment. We have a Fourth Amendment. Go get a damn warrant, and that's it.
Yeah, it's it really bothered me, like, in the beginning of last year, I think it was right after Trump was inaugurated, or maybe it was the beginning. I don't remember. They were re-debating the whole issue of the surveillance and you know, the NSA queries and 702s and this and that. And they basically passed the thing again. And Rand Paul was up there screaming, like, do you guys not see what just happened? What, you were just going to reauthorize this thing? And it was really, and Trump was in support of it. And you can't, listen, if Papadopoulos and major media knew in April of 2017 that there was a FISA on him, that means, like Papadopoulos said, that means that James Wolfe also leaked information on him. Because the only media that was doing stories on Papadopoulos in April of 2017 that I could find was the Washington Post.
See, this is why it doesn't matter. It doesn't, everybody's theory about what his role was, it does, it just doesn't, it's semantics. There's things that you can dig up for reasoning anything, but it's just semantics at this point. This is the key to it all. I mean, how do you, the biggest question, and Dan Bongino, speaking of Dan Bongino, he's the one that keeps bringing up the thing here. Now, you have Robert Mueller that is, you know, sniffing around Roger Stone right now, which is like, you know, five levels up from the base of all of this. How the real question is, how did this all get started? It all these Democrats that say if we win the House, we're going to make sure that we take over the Russia investigation, really get to the bottom of it. How can you get to the bottom of everything when you don't even want to ask the most basic questions? Where did it all start? You don't want to show anybody the data that outlines how this actually started, because you think it'll be damaging to the country and our international relationships. But we're going to trust you to actually wrap this up. It's ridiculous.
That's important, though, to be honest, Frank, the whole Roger Stone thing. For several different reasons, one of them being the whole basis of how this started in the first place was Guccifer 2 and WikiLeaks. And that's where Roger Stone comes in. I don't know what this, and you know, I have a couple of things to talk about with him today. There were some emails that came out. So let's spend just a few minutes on Roger Stone, because I've been following him for a really long time. Let me know your thoughts on this, Frank.
Okay.
Roger Stone, throughout the entire campaign, billed himself as directly connected to President Trump. Every time he was on InfoWars or anything, he was always talking about he was directly connected to the president, the team, blah, 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 blah. We got a flurry of emails released by the New York Times yesterday, you know, apparently between Roger Stone and a campaign surrogate who was trying to get Stone to Bannon. Now, let's not talk about the fact that the special counsel likely leaked these to the New York Times. I don't see how, unless Stone did it himself, who knows with this guy. But Bannon, he basically said Bannon ignored him, never returned his phone calls, never spoke to him. And then finally, after email, trying to say, like, here, we've got this information, we've got that information, trying to push the Danny Williams story. You remember Danny Williams, that InfoWars came out with him?
I don't, actually.
Danny Williams, Clinton.
Is that the son of President Clinton?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So after trying to push the Danny Williams story, there, basically Bannon is like, he wrote to the other surrogate and he said, I have more important things to do than to talk to Stone, which, in my opinion, given how close to Trump Bannon was, completely negates everything that Stone said about being close to the campaign throughout the entire deal, which bolsters for me personally a lot of the theories that I had laid down early on about Stone and Manafort. Now, in my research over the past couple days, of which I've done a lot, have found that I didn't even know how deep this was, but Roger Stone was like literally the reason why Corey Lewandowski was fired. He engineered this public, you know, drubbing of Corey Lewandowski in the media and elsewhere, and basically made him so toxic that the Trump campaign demoted him. And who did Stone bring in to make sure that he was sitting right there next to Trump? Paul Manafort. So now someone else that was really connected to Roger Stone, very closely connected, Michael Caputo. Michael Caputo. I did a whole video on Michael Caputo and Clovis and Paige.
I watched that.
What did you think of it? Honestly, just be honest.
It was a lot. I mean, you always do good work, in my opinion. But I was watching. It's like 44 minutes long, and I was getting confused, and I didn't. At certain points, I didn't know what to make of the Caputo guy, and just, you know, it was very odd about the things that they were saying in public. And then the things that they were retracting and walking back on, it would just make it. I didn't even know what questions to ask toward the end of it because it's so convoluted.
Yeah, and you're right. And I did a poor job. And I'm glad that you said that because I want to redo it again and be a little bit more clear on it. And, you know, a lot of people said, I see there's something here, but I just don't understand what.
Yes, yes. That was my feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Sucks to be me because I did a bad job. Basically, they Caputo and Stone said that they've been contacted, Caputo specifically, by at least three or four different, quote, intelligence plants. Right. So it was somebody from inside the NSA that apparently had WikiLeaks emails, and Caputo saw that the WikiLeaks emails that he had been told about came out in the releases later on. He made this big deal about it at the exact same time as they found out that Halper was a spy. So in other words, they find out Halper's a spy, and then all of a sudden Caputo and Stone, well, not Stone yet, but Caputo comes out saying, hey, I was approached by an intelligence person too. And it was just very weird timing. And then the next day they walked the entire thing back like it was one big misunderstanding. The man sat on Neil Cavuto's show for 10 minutes explaining how he spent hours on the phone with this intermediary outside of the campaign headquarters talking to him about this information.
It's almost like they got their scripts mixed up. Like they're saying the same things, and one person was supposed to be on a different page or something like that.
Yeah, it was. And the guy that it ended up being was Trump's campaign lead for North Carolina. That was the intermediary. Anyway, there's that. And then a couple weeks later. Now, hold on. I'm doing it again. Prior to them saying they got information about WikiLeaks, just a few weeks prior, they had said, Caputo had come out and said that he was interviewed by Mueller and he went on his, like, you know, GoFundMe tour. And he said that what the media was reporting about what happened was absolutely 100% correct. Robert Mueller was completely 100% focused on WikiLeaks, Guccifer 2, and what happened with the WikiLeaks emails. Then 2 weeks later, he says, I tried to tell Robert Mueller that they were telling me they had WikiLeaks emails, and he completely ignored me and didn't care. Well, those two things don't square.
No, they don't. Now, let me ask you one question. Roger Stone, what would be, if we're looking at this from the point of view as here's a guy with odd timing who brings in a flawed man in Paul Manafort, and it all kind of looks like this could be part of a scheme to put in something that could be easily seized upon in the future. What in Roger Stone's past or present would suggest that he would have ill intent for Donald Trump? And any kind of reason to try to sabotage that? Who outside of the MAGA world would be someone he'd be allied with?
You know, it's a really good question, and I haven't been able to figure it out yet.
Yeah, because it's one thing to say, well, Roger Stone could be part of the mechanism that was trying to plant these easily seized upon dupes or these shady characters inside the Trump campaign for a future landmine explosion or a claymore or whatever the hell it is. But then it begs the question. Who would he be working on behalf of? I mean, is he just like, you know, a Joker character that wants to watch the world burn, or is he working alongside of somebody? And that's the thing that gets me.
I know, and I agree with you, and I'm like biting my tongue here because I wanted to say the only thing that really, like, I scratch my head at with him is his affiliation with the Podestas back in the day in the 70s when they started their lobbying business together. So
maybe blackmail then?
I don't know. I just don't know. And you know what? Maybe this is all just a big coincidence that all this stuff happened.
Could be. It could just be unfortunate. You know, Sigmund Freud said sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Wow, I don't know Sigmund Freud quotes like you.
Oh, I just know that one.
Oh, well, I need to learn them.
I know that one because of George Carlin. Hey, Tracy, can we take a really quick break so I can take a piss?
Yes, while you're gone, I'll read our newest sponsor.
Perfect, because I have to run down the hall. So you do that. I'll be back in 1.5 minutes.
Go. Perfect. Perfect. Well, then. Dark to Light is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is a really awesome brand new addition supporting our show. It's an online learning community with over 20,000 classes in business, design, technology, and other amazing stuff. Like, I went on their website and I'm like, ooh, Adobe Illustrator. I always wanted to know how to use that. You can even take classes in social media marketing, data science, mobile photography, creative writing, you name it, they've got it. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, or just explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to help keep you learning and thriving. I am going to look into learning a little bit more about how to use editing software, because apparently I'm going to need to be editing out the clip that happened before Frank ran off the show. And if you didn't hear it and you don't understand what I'm talking about, then you know I did it. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering Dark to Light listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/Dark to Light. Again, go to Skillshare.com/Dark to Light to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/Dark to Light. Now I know why Frank was so antsy.
Here I am.
Busting through my stuff. Like, whenever you're in a rush like that, I'm like, there's something. I knew it. I knew there was going to be some reason.
I was twisting in my seat.
I could tell. Yeah. So I just did Skillshare. Skillshare is this brand new sponsor of ours, which we're so thankful for. They're an online learning community where you can do
I know Skillshare.
Great.
I know. And isn't it like just like a dollar a month or something like that?
Well, we're going to give them 2 months for 99 cents because they're dark. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of great things that people have learned, you know, musical instruments, web design. There's so many great things because I've heard them get plugged elsewhere. And I always thought it was a really great concept for a service. So that's cool that they're on with us now.
Yeah, they're on with us. And I said, I'm going to take their editing class because I'm going to need to edit out the entree to their advertisement.
There you go. All righty then.
Do you mind if I go take a... Okay. So that's basically it on Stone and Caputo and all of that. And, you know, we spent a lot of time on this today, but I hope that's okay, Frank.
No. I learned a lot.
Well, there's more, but I want to talk about Beto.
Oh, how nice. How nice this guy. What a star, rising star. Oh, what a rising star here.
You know, they're building him up to be, I see it. It's like a mirror of what they did with Obama. Like, he did that speech and you were like, who the hell is this guy? Right? You remember?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like they're doing that with him. So he's got like this war chest of all this extra money that he's not going to need because he's not going to win. And somebody, a reporter, asked him, are you going to give some of this to the other candidates that could use it? And he was like, yeah, it's mine.
Yeah.
Now I know why. Why is he doing that, Frank? Why don't you tell everyone?
Because he's sending money to make sure that all of the members of the migrant horde that is moving up the up Mexico right toward our border were fed and clothed and they had new shoes and all that stuff. Whatever the hell it is, he was siphoning off money, laundering money to the caravan.
Horrible.
And that's what is being exposed by James O'Keefe, who was not lying when I heard him say that there was more coming out tomorrow night. And he said it had to do with Texas. And he said not only just Beto, but Beto and the migrant caravan. I was like, what the hell? And to see that they're laundering money across the border to help thousands of foreign nationals to come over here and rush our border.
They don't see anything wrong with it either.
They think
they're doing something noble.
But Tracy, this is the thing here. These are not Americans. I mean, we're the Democrat Party. I said it last night. I hate talking about parties because even to say Democrats, that is a word. I mean, you have Communist Party USA and Democratic Socialists that are using the once proud Democrat Party as an exoskeleton. This is not an American party. It's an infiltrate. The seeds had been laid a couple of decades ago, and now this is, it's all coming to fruition. It's not an American party. They scoff at nationalism. They scoff at the Constitution. The Constitution is a hindrance to everything they want to do. They don't care about competing voices. They don't care about competing opinions. This is why they want the borders open. This is why they don't want voter ID laws to be implemented. It's not about disaffecting black voters, because that's insulting in itself to say that somebody would not be able to pay $8 every 10 years to renew a non-voter ID. And in many cases, you can get them for free if you're over the age of 62 or if you're on Social Security or something like that. This is about making sure that elections can be tampered with as much as possible to implement just this autonomous state that is just growing and self-perpetuating and just built on just a sucking of taxation and borrowing. And it's really, they are not apologetic in any way, shape, or form. And they all deserve to be exposed.
What has the common theme been too amongst all these exposés that O'Keefe has done? The common theme has been that they cannot tell you what they're actually standing for because it wouldn't be accepted.
Right.
That in and of itself should be enough. That should be enough to tell. That's the whole story. The whole story is that their ideas are so ridiculously unpopular and hated that they have to lie about them in order to get elected.
Yeah.
Now, Frank, I know that you are you're gonna rebuke me, but please don't. Somewhat of a scholar on the Constitution. And so, I mean, Trump comes out. He says he's going to make this executive order, which will definitely go to the Supreme Court, about birthright citizenship and the 14th Amendment, you know, and all of these leftists come out of the woodwork saying they're constitutional experts. And, you know, I wish they would pay as much attention as to the Second Amendment, which is very straightforward and clear, and the First Amendment, as they would to the 14th Amendment, which you are going to very kindly talk to us about right now.
Well, yeah, well, I'm a fan of the Constitution. I wouldn't call myself a scholar. You're right. I'm rebuking you.
Oh, geez.
But, you know, but this was the most thing. Now, here's the thing. He says he's going to be issuing an executive order. First of all, he did not come out with this and start, you know, dangling it in people's faces. He was asked a question. He was asked a question by whether HBO or Axios. I saw it on one of those things. And from there, it became this big thing where, you know, of course, the media coverage is then that Trump is talking about an executive order on the birthright citizenship to divide the country. He was asked a question and he answered it, and they already knew what they were going for. Now, the thing about this is now I don't like the 14th Amendment. Historically, it's a fantastic amendment because the sole purpose for it, it is now in 2018 obsolete, and it is now, there's no use for it. It's a vestige of a piece of our history as a country that we look back on in the post-war between the states era. And the only reason why the 14th Amendment was passed was to create a new class of citizens, which was the newly freed slave. That is the only reason why the 14th Amendment was passed. And it was actually there to constitutionalize what was the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which even the drafters of the 14th Amendment believed did not have all of the teeth of federal authority because it could be nullified at the state level.
You don't sound like a scholar at all. You just sound like somebody who willy-nilly went and read the Constitution.
Yeah. Here's the thing about this. They take things, you know how in the media they'll take a 15-minute nuanced talk, and they'll take a 10-second clip and they'll take that sound bite and they'll run it around the world for a couple of days, and they'll completely misconstrue everything that's what's going on here. I have a couple of things here. I had some notes since you brought this up before the show. I went into my recycling bin over here and I brought up some notes that I prepared on for Halloween night when I was talking about this on my show. Now, firstly, the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment, okay? All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, in 1866, Senator Jacob Howard of Michigan, now this is within the debate, and all of these amendments, everything that was done, from the ratifying of the Constitution itself to the Bill of Rights to every amendment thereafter, they are all available with the debates. The intent for what became these passages were completely out there in the open, and they are there for everybody to see. So intent is not lost. All right. When you sit down and you draft up a contract in 2018, you don't draft that contract with another party, understanding that by 2026, we can all reinterpret the words to mean whatever the hell we want it to mean. Then what the hell is the point of making a legal agreement? Now, he said this, Jacob Howard of Michigan, he said this. He's the author of the Citizenship Clause, by the way. He had this to say in 1866. I have offered it simply declaratory of what I regard as the law of the land already, that every person born within the limits of the United States and subject to their jurisdiction, their meaning the several states, is by virtue of natural law and national law a citizen of the United States. He continues, listen up here. This will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers accredited to the government of the United States, but will include every other class of person. You see, people don't want you reading the debates. They don't want you understanding the intent. Progressives want issues like this to be easily manipulated by the passage of time and precedent. Now, simply put, like I said before, this was designed to create a new class of citizen, the freed slave. It was also meant to reverse the Dred Scott versus Sanford decision in 1857. So pretty much the 14th Amendment was seen as a necessary way to overturn Dred Scott and settle the question of citizenship for newly freed slaves. Now, you know, since then, I have not been able to find any law. There is no statute. There is no definitive Supreme Court decision. Nothing. There is absolutely nothing that has established that a person from anywhere in the world, from Mongolia, from Luxembourg, can come here. Two foreign nationals can come here, 9 months pregnant, squeeze out a kid on vacation, and that child will be able to enjoy the privileges of citizenship. And therefore be able to bring over several generations of their family and just squat here and become citizens. There is nothing there. What I'm starting to see is that somewhere,
I was just going to ask this,
somewhere around the 1960s and 70s, the executive branch just started granting citizenship to people. It was just the bureaucracy. So there was no Supreme Court decision. There's no act of Congress. So when I first heard that Trump is coming out with an executive order to end birthright citizenship to myself, birthright citizenship, and I didn't know too much about it, I'm saying to myself, well, if this is true, I can't jump up and down for him making immigration law from the Oval Office, because that's exactly what DACA was and we all came down on it. Mm-hmm. So what the hell is going on here? But when I learned all of this stuff, I'm asking myself, perhaps Trump isn't legislating from the Oval Office. Perhaps it's just very well may be that the president is making an executive order pursuant to law that has merely been twisted by bureaucrats for decades now, because there's nothing there. Like, for now, the thing that worries me is Neil Gorsuch, I mean, even Brett Kavanaugh, they may not even be yes votes. They may not be votes that we can count on to on anything. I don't know where this would even go if it goes to the Supreme Court.
If they're constitutionalists, they're going to interpret and read the arguments just like you did. And I don't think there's any argument there. I really don't.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. How can they say that the president cannot legislate via an executive order on immigration when he's issuing an order to be pursuant to a law that was never changed, never amended, nothing. This is an amendment, a constitutional amendment on the books. Nothing needs to be changed. It was never changed in the first place. You know, I found an 1898 Supreme Court decision that said that birthright citizenship for the children of legal immigrants was in there. So people that were naturalized, they took the oath of citizenship, or they had the green card holders. I saw that, but it flies in the face of logic that anyone would think that you can go to a sovereign nation without consent of the nation itself, have a child, and all of a sudden you are a citizen, and so is several generations of your family open to being brought over. It flies in the face of logic.
You know where you can learn more about this?
Where?
Blinkist.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. If you're like me, the list of books you want to read or those people suggest you read is never ending and always expanding, and you simply don't have time to read them all. Our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must-reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and the Constitution and distills them down to their most impactful elements, so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. With Blinkist, you'll expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. I will be using Blinkist to try and find, is there a book of these?
Which?
Did anyone ever write a book with these arguments? And like what kind, you know what I'm saying? Like, you did all this research to find this stuff. Is there a book where I can find all this in one place?
I don't know. I don't know. To be honest, I have books on the Federalist Papers. I have books on our founders and a lot. I'm building up a small section of my library just on the Civil War itself. So I have some suggestions I can make, maybe some Thomas DiLorenzo, some I don't know what the hell, but there has to be something.
Well, I'm sure Blinkist has a couple of them out there for you guys, too. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special order just for a special offer. I was so excited I got through this whole thing without making a mistake. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/darktolight to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/darktolight to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel anytime. That's Blinkist.com/darktolight. This topic, Frank, is like super important, and it'll lead us into like one of the next things that I wanted to talk about too. What do you think about yesterday when Trump was asked about the rocks being thrown, and he said that the military was instructed to shoot as though rocks are lethal force?
Well, I don't know. a rock versus an army. As David and Goliath story right there, if I ever heard one. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure that, you know, rules of engagement are set in place, and we're going to have a lot of non-lethal options available. We have direct energy weapons that we can be using, sound weapons. We have so many things that we should be throwing the kitchen sink. We should be throwing the kitchen sink at this horde, and that's what I say.
I think that they really underestimate Trump, and they continue to do it over and over again. He's not messing. This is like they're setting this up to be like some kind of public relations nightmare for him. Like, you know, what kind of optics will it be for the army at the southern border attacking a horde of immigrants with women and children at the front of the line, of course? You know, the pictures, the optics, what will the country think? I got to be honest with you. There has never been, if there is one place on God's green earth that I am comfortable and satisfied with our troops being stationed, it's at our damn border to protect our country. And these people are waving the flag of another country and charging by the thousands at our border. That is an invasion.
Yeah, well, it's not a charge so much. It seems like they're going to, I think that all of the requests for transportation have gotten denied. So it might take them a little bit longer than the midterms to get here. But so that's good, because we know that that was supposed to, that was going to be a big selling point. They're still about 900 miles away. But, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've said it many, many times before when I thank our military every night on my show. Here around the world, I wish they were all home. For the most part, I would definitely love to see the 30,000 troops or so that we have in Germany go back to our border too. If there's any place I'd ever want to see our troops, it's on our defending our borders.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about optics, Tracy. I am a fatalist when it comes to this. It's not just so much that they want to see a standoff at the border. They, and I say the organizers of this and everybody who stands to benefit politically, and we know who stands to benefit politically from this standoff, they want to see people die.
I know.
This is not it. Because if you think that, you know, right now they're having a hard time trying to keep everybody well behaved as they're marching through Honduras and Guatemala and Mexico. If you think that crowd, which is like 50-1, military age male to women and children, okay? The 50-1 male to women and children. If you think that there are not ample amount of agent provocateurs in that crowd waiting to do something that is going to provoke some kind of response, you have no clue. I mean, they are going to – this is what they're rooting for. They are rooting for carnage. They are rooting for carnage, and that is the sickest part about all of this.
I really think, like, you know, I want to see them lose in a, like, I don't, you know, there are terrorists mixed up with those people and gang members. I don't give a crap what anybody says. I don't care. And, you know, to strap your kid to your back and travel across, like, you could have stopped in Mexico, damn it. You could have stopped in Mexico if you were asylum seekers. I'm so sick of that crap. You've crossed through how many countries now that you would have accepted you for asylum? That's the law. Isn't it the rule that you're supposed to stop at the next safe country?
That's what I thought. And then, you know, I had a few people call in and say it's a little bit muddied and you can do what you want. I don't know. It's ridiculous to say that, you know, beggars can be choosers when all you want to do is save your life. And you have Mexico that's offering these people places to stay and work. They were offering them both. And they said, we like Hollywood Boulevard instead.
The crazy thing is that the media has interviewed some of these folks, and like one guy says, I want a pardon for my murder. He committed like 17 murders and he was coming here for a pardon.
What does that even mean?
I mean,
shows you how stupid people are. I committed a murder in Italy. I'm going to go to Austria to get a pardon.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is what they're accidentally interviewing. And they're like, I mean, you're live. Whoops. Whoops.
Well, they did that with the Palestinians that were sending firebombs with kites over the wall in Israel. Now, I don't really take hard stances with everything out there in the Middle East, even with Israel. I see that we have a lot of problems that crop up in that area. But, you know, you can see where the media is, where they are putting all of their assets and what they're trying to gin up, you know, so. You know, they're out there interviewing people who are sending over firebombs and waving Nazi flags on the Palestinian side of things. And they're like, oh, you know, the reporters are taken aback by what's being said in front of cameras, and they're trying to explain it away and dampen it down and try to, you know, find a reasonable angle to report on it. But there's just no way of reporting on it. This is something. These are situations, especially at our own southern border, that in a sane time, Democrats, Republicans, libertarian types, all of that would see this and say, all right, well, listen, we can't stand for this. We can't stand for this.
You would think. But you would think.
It's a sane, in the same time. Yes.
So then on top of all that, we've got Brennan coming out this morning and endorsing and saying that that Beto is a man of integrity and should be Let's just go through this really quickly. As a former resident of Texas and a proud UT Austin alumnus, I believe Beto O'Rourke is the type of individual Texans need in the U.S. Senate to represent their best interests. He has the integrity, intellect, and character that is in short supply in Congress. Vote.
Well, yeah. Well, he voted for Gus Hall.
I mean, yeah.
He's a communist who weaponized our own CIA against our own Congress, the body that created the CIA. And then you have, I mean, you see, there's just so much, there's so much irony in this. And for a communist to say that he's a man of integrity who takes campaign funds to fund foreign invaders to rush our border because it's all part of the game. It's all part of the game. It's in somebody like John Brennan's blood to do things like this and to stand by people. And it's just what he likes.
It's almost like an anti-endorsement.
Yeah. It's almost like, is he joking? You think that it was like, you know, one of those, like he's doing comedy where it's like, you know, he's very sardonic. And you don't know if he's, you know, he's just like straight face. It's almost like, it's as if Leslie Nielsen had said it with some kind of a deadpan delivery, and you know, okay, he's joking. That's funny.
That's not what.
Yeah, no, he's not. John Brennan is a far cry from Leslie Nielsen.
You know what's crazy? I got to tell you this story really quickly. Oh my gosh, I don't know if you saw this or you got to talk to Brendan down in D.C. Brendan Dilley, did you get to talk to him at all?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, did he tell you who he was on the plane with coming up?
No.
Oh my gosh. He was literally sitting on the plane with John Brennan.
What?
He has photos of it and everything.
He was sitting in the same aisle?
He was like two rows away from John Brennan. God. And he said, I hope this plane isn't going to Gitmo.
Oh my, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I would have think that he would have brought that up when we were talking. You know who we were talking to? It was me, Brendan, Ann Vandersteel, and also Mike Flynn Jr. We were all hanging out for a little bit, and it was really, really something else.
Isn't Mike Flynn Jr. great?
He's fantastic, and it's getting me really excited for December or whenever the hell they believe that they're going to be able to finally start talking and fighting back because. Mm. You know, especially the way that he described the character of his father and Mike Flynn Jr. seems like a little bit more of a fighter than his father is. His father seems like a little bit more of a meek, dutiful man.
Yeah.
And Mike Flynn is ready to come out swinging.
Oh, he's ready. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He's definitely ready.
It made me very excited. And I support that family 100%.
Likewise. They're great. And I got to tell you, now that we're talking about that, I did find something else that I kind of glossed over originally. I sent it over to him and he was like, that's interesting. So Kislyak, you know, the whole thing with the Obama puts these huge sanctions on Russia, and Flynn gets on the phone, basically talks to Kislyak and says, listen, hang off on doing anything in reaction to this. We're going to be taking power in a couple days and we'll be able to kind of smooth this over. Just, you know, what a normal transition team would do when the former administration tries to smack them in the face and screw everything up right away with relations with another country. Right. Mm-hmm. And the State Department comes out and even says it's fine. I mean, they do this stuff all the time. There's no problem with him talking to him. Well, they spin this into the big lie that gets him indicted. Ridiculous. Want to know what I found? I found very interesting in retrospect. 1 week before Flynn was forced to resign, Michael Cohen, who just endorsed Gillum, I believe, traipses into General Flynn's office and hand delivers a proposal on how to remove the sanctions against Russia, co-authored by none other than one Felix Sater.
Oh. Oh.
Hmm.
You know.
Who is Felix Sater? Can you fill anyone in? It's hard.
No, this guy, I have come to you and only you to get information on.
I just took a sip of water. Sorry. Felix Sater was the person. Okay, so Michael Cohen brings Felix Sater into Trump's sphere in 2007, 2008. He's a real estate developer. in quotes. He tries to do a deal with Donald Trump. The whole thing falls through. Trump finds out that Sater's really a dirty dude. And he comes out in an interview back then and says, listen, sometimes you don't realize people are, you know, a-holes until you start to work with them. Distances himself completely from Sater, doesn't do another thing with him. But Michael Cohen and Felix Sater are childhood friends from way back in the day. Michael Cohen is the one who introduces Sater to Trump in the first place when he starts working with Trump, right? So Michael Cohen and Felix Sater in 2015 are trying to get a building built in Russia. Give him the letter of intent to sign. He signs it. Then during the campaign, Felix Sater writes all kinds of crazy overt messages to Michael Cohen in email, like Putin's going to help get our boy elected. Ivanka can go to the, you know, and sit in Putin's chair. All kinds of things about, you know, how he could get Trump close to Putin. Just really crazy, over the top, overt ridiculousness from Felix Sater. Mm. Well, come to find out, Felix Sater is an intelligence asset for the U.S. government for years. Who did he work for? Loretta Lynch. Oh, what a coincidence. What a coincidence.
So where is this all going? Here's the big thing. Here's the big thing. It is November 2nd. The next time that you and I get together for this, all of this is going to be behind us. The midterms are going to be behind us. And the midterms really do. When we hear about all these connections and these people and the attempts to frame this one and the attempts to destroy this one and impeach this and stop that, obstruct this, investigate that, spy on this. What the hell do you think we're going to be looking at this time next week? That's what I would leave off with.
Yeah.
The end of this episode. What kind of a world are we living in 1 week from today?
You want to know in my gut what I feel like?
Yeah.
They're going to get trounced.
The Democrats?
Yeah.
I already said on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the day after the election, I am going to, if all goes well and the majority stay in place, because all this has been the presidential election in 2016 was about the courts and about the culture. And 2018 now, this is all about trying to allow the next 2 years to wrap up these investigations. We're on the cusp of wrapping up these investigations. And I just do not want them to be stopped. I don't care about party politics. I just want whatever's going on right now and the Devin Nunes and the Jim Jordans out there and the Chuck Grassleys. I want them. I trust those three right there right
yep.
now.
Yep.
And I want
even
them,
Meadows.
Yeah, I want them to finish their work. I am not a party guy whatsoever. But as far as those three individuals or those four individuals go, I want them to finish their work.
No, I agree with you. It needs to happen. And remember, we've got a FISA report coming. We've got a FISA report coming out.
I want it all. I want it all.
It needs to happen. Like, you know, we're preaching to the choir. Get your asses out of your chairs on Tuesday and vote. And I hope let me know, Frank, because I really, really want to spend some time with you on Tuesday night.
Oh, by all means. No, I'm going to let you know. I'm actually going to be on the phone with my buddy Abe, who helps me produce the show now. Yeah. So, well, I mean, he's been helping me for a while. Like, you know, he helps me with highlights and he's got great ideas and we vibe and all that stuff. So we have some ideas for Tuesday night's election coverage. I think we're going to be live from 8 p.m. Eastern time to about 12 p.m. Eastern time, 12 a.m. Eastern time. So, I'm thinking over the course of those 4 hours, it's got to be revolving door of friends and colleagues and callers. So we're gonna put together some ideas to make it really easy to manage. And you have got to be on there for however long you want, or make multiple appearances as the night progresses and we're seeing things project a little bit better. It's going to be a fun night Tuesday night, no matter what.
I'll do your on the street for you, and I'll like just pop in from my desk here. I'm happy to do I'll hang out with you until you get tired of me. So I'm excited about it. Before we leave, Donald Trump just tweeted something. It is just beautiful. Okay. It is a photo of him. It looks like a movie cover. It says, "Sanctions are coming November 5th. And it's a picture of him.
Sanctions.
For Iran. After we got that fake news that the Treasury Department was like, we're reversing all the sanctions. He just hammered Iran today. Pompeo came out in a press conference. And here is the glorious president of the United States.
Yeah, with the with the Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Font.
I love him.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, I'm going to miss this guy when he's not in office.
Oh my God, I'll never be the same.
There's not going to be anybody else that, I mean, he was, there's not going to be anybody else that's going to be able to do this.
No.
It's just the PR aspect of it. Like I said before, we need the wrecking ball so that we can make room for the surgeons, for the people to come in and, you know, the statesmen to come back in. We needed Donald Trump to be the wrecking ball, to be the one to say, hey, listen, I will weather the storm for everybody so that it makes it creates a path for those who can come in and talk a little bit more
freely, like Lindsey Graham
or Rand Paul.
Right.
That's what I would love.
Rand Paul is president.
But still, what we have now, about over 156 million people employed. His approval rating popped to 51% so far today. Wages are starting to gain more. Hispanic unemployment, all-time lows. And this is a couple of days before the election.
I know.
This is a couple of days before the election. It's one of those things. And you know, that's why I just say, got to get out there. And just know who you're voting for and do it. Over here in New York, it's not as simple as just voting for Republican all the way through. Over here in New York on November 6th, I'm voting for two people. I'm voting for a Reform Party candidate, Joe Cardullo, in my 17th district, because Nita Lowey of 30 years, she is running. She was going to be running unopposed again. So I'm not voting for a Republican in the in my local congressional race. And then, of course, for governor, I'm not voting the Republican either. I'm voting for Libertarian Larry Sharp, who anybody who listens to this show that lives in New York or has people in New York who doesn't know what's going on, let them know about Larry Sharp. Please.
Listen,
it's amazing.
The fact that they even had ballot access is a miracle. Wayne Redlich was the only one who got close.
So
2 years ago. Well, listen, hey, this was a good one, Frank. This was a good one.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys, for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Hurricane Frank
and Beans.
Hurricane Frank and Beans.
Hurricane Frank and Beans. And you can find us on Google Play, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. Please make sure to share the show and subscribe. Next time we come back here, we're either going to be gloating and excited about the future, or we're going to be trying to figure out what the heck happened. But I think it'll be the former.
That's it. You know, I'm just going to be chilling out. One thing I do know is this. In 2016, I came to the studio to do an election night broadcast, and I was completely ready to accept that Hillary Clinton was going to be president, not because I believed that she had enthusiasm or momentum or that people cared about her. Not because of that, because like I said, she had already stolen one election that year. And you know what? Just like with Obama, I voted for him in 2008. I wised up by 2012. And when 2012 he was reelected, all of my friends that did not like him, we looked at each other, we shrugged our shoulders, and we said, all right, let's just get through the next 4 years and see what we can salvage in 2016. There was none of us that were thinking about going to throw a garbage can through the front window of a Starbucks. We were not thinking about going to burn down to start car fires. We weren't thinking about going to Hollywood and smashing up the sidewalks. That's just not who we are. So, you know, push comes to shove on Tuesday night. All I know is that Wednesday morning is going to come and it's time to get back to work. It's time to get on with your lives, enjoy whatever the hell we have to do. Let's just hope that we do it with a little bit more sun on the horizon and not so much this buildup, this overcast weather that the totalitarian left likes to keep over everything.
Amen. That's a good way to close. Amen. We'll see you guys next weekend.
Be well.
Bye.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.